The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to Christopher Mills of Harwood Capital, one of the UK's finest small and mid-cap investors. So welcome, Christopher.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit battered, I must admit. I mean, it's been pretty tough sledging over the past sort of like 6 to 12 months, just about for everybody across all different types of asset class.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and that's largely not least because of the Ukraine-Russia war, sort of like rising interest rates and inflation expectations alongside now, obviously, the cost of living crisis. But equally, as we've mentioned, sort of like in the equity world, valuations have now reset lower significantly on a lot of sort of quality stocks, sort of babies in the bathwater. So putting all that together with your sort of like unique insights, both on the sort of the public and the private markets, what's your sort of outlook for equities going forward?
Well, I suppose we in North Atlantic were quite lucky because, you know, we went into this mess with about 160 million in cash, or about, you know, over 23% of our assets. And a great majority of that was in US dollars. So that's given us a bit of insulation. But, you know, it's very hard, I think, to be too optimistic about equities at the moment for the very obvious reasons that inflation is unquestionably going to eat into consumer disposable income. You know, you've got people in the United States basically saying the Federal Reserve is going to engineer a recession. You're coming off a very high level of corporate profits as a proportion of GNP. So there's quite a lot of things that can start to go wrong, on top of which, as we've agreed, you know, interest rates are probably going to be rising for the foreseeable future. So, you know, rising interest rates, falling disposable income, and in the United Kingdom, higher taxes as well as people move into higher tax bands, which as a result of inflation, you know, certainly doesn't make you think this is going to be a very happy time. So, you know, we're still pretty cautious, although in fact, we are actually starting to spend some of our money at the moment. But very much focused on things that we believe will be relatively unimpacted by a downturn in consumer expenditure.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you've had a pretty illustrious career, sort of like with, you know, starting probably sometime in the 70s, but you've seen so many of these cycles, certainly the downturn and the sort of like the unemployment problems of the early 80s. We had obviously the 87 crash. We then had the 90s recession. We had the dot-com blow up, had the great financial crisis, obviously had COVID. So you've seen this movie before in numerous different guises. And given your sort of like...
I go back longer than that. I started working in 1975 in the city and you can remember what 74 was like.
Okay, well, even better. So you've got fantastic exposure to inflation and how best to navigate it. Now, if you've obviously cleverly, you know, sort of like got your cash in dollars, then as you say, it's provided a good insulation. Sort of like, you know, changing your sort of like, you've been cautious up to this point and you still are cautious, obviously. But you mentioned you sort of going a bit more on the front foot. Sort of, are you seeing, I mean, we'll talk about those in the details, but just sort of broad picture, have we reached sort of like peak silly valuations in baby and the bathwater stocks here?
Well, I think, I mean, I'll give you an example of something we've just bought a reasonable stake in, which is a company called Randall and Quilter. Randall and Quilter had a bid at 175p a share. Arbitrage has piled in. 25% or just over 25% of the shareholders rejected the bid. The arbitragers bailed out. Everybody knew the bid, knew that the company needed $100 million because $100 million of goodwill had come off their balance sheet and that had to be replaced with regulatory capital. And the person who bid 175p knew that. So we've taken a reasonable stake, an average purchase price of about 99.
Right.
Actually, 98.
Against an acquisition price, a bid price of 175.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's in the public domain. At our entry price, that valued the business at about $460 million. It's in the public domain. The company says it expects to make at least $90 million in 2024. The business should be pretty recession-proof because one of its businesses is basically an insurance platform, which enables insurance companies to write business in jurisdictions where they don't have a license, and they take a 5% fee for that. The platform was growing very rapidly. Last year, it was up nearly 100% to about $1 billion of annual turnover. And they've already forecast $1.75 billion for this year. The second business was a capital-intensive business, but they've changed that. What they do is they take on basically old insurance companies, captive insurance companies, and they take over the running off of those captive insurance companies. Now, again, within the last year, they raised $280 million from third parties, and they put in $70 million of their own. And basically, they've turned it into a fund management business where they take a fee of 4% or just over 4% of the gross reserves they're managing. Now, to put that in context, the $350 million that they've got in that vehicle should be able to support something in the region of $2 billion of gross reserves. So you've got a budding little fund management company there, which nobody's focusing on. You've got a platform, which is completely the wrong price. And then also, you've got the final runoff of all the captives that they've got in their books, which is the capital intensive bit, but which will ultimately start throwing out capital. So those are the sort of things that, frankly, if you get rising interest rates, that's probably going to be good news for them, because they're going to have all those reserves earning more money. And they're turning from being a capital intensive business into a capital light business. And we got in a discount to their tangible book.
Crikey.
So, you know, they're starting to sort of come out there. And
So you're basically waiting for sort of like crazy opportunities like that are just not must buys. One thing that seems really strange as well is that when you look at the sort of the discount for, you know, obviously your two flagship unit trusts, you've got Onyx International, which is a 16-17% discount to net assets, and then you've got North Atlantic smaller companies.
No, it's a bit smaller than that now. Onyx is about 10.
Oh, is it? Oh, it's about 10%, is it? But I mean, North Atlantic was on 25 or something like that.
Oh, God, it's on more. I think the problem with North Atlantic is that people at the moment are very worried about people with unquoted investments. And frankly, they shouldn't be in this case. If we go through our portfolio, I'll do it very quickly. I mean, we could easily do the whole hour on that alone. In the third fund, there's a company called Utitech.
Yeah.
It's currently in our books for $30 million. There are two bids on the table at $40 million. Now, we own a third of that fund. Utitech is a specialty manufacturer of components for medical equipment. It'll do about $4.5 million of EBITDA this year. So the bids are about 9x EBITDA. And that would be a lot of money coming back to us. That'd be about $15 million. Then in the fourth fund, which is going well too, we're about to sell a company called Covent Bridge. Covent Bridge basically is a global leader in assisting insurance companies to mitigate fraud. That sounds very fancy, but what that actually means is following people around and taking pictures of them who claim that they've got a personal injury problem when they're in fact more than capable of playing squash. we also, the company also does exam fraud. It does.
They'll be busy.
For the federal government in the United States, it does food stamp fraud, and it does Medicare, Medicaid equipment fraud. That's in process to be sold, and that could also generate quite a lot of money for us. Mm. Other companies in there is a components business, which sources hard-to-find components, which, as you can imagine, is booming at the moment, to say the least.
Yeah.
Ironically, it's a business you'd expect to be a disaster, but it isn't. It's an airline catering business. Even in COVID, it actually made its budget because one of its biggest customers is Federal Express, and Federal Express went through the roof. And then our fifth fund, which is getting to be fully invested, we've already had one exit, which we held for less than a year, which was a data center business, which went out about 2.7 times. We've got another company, which is in our books for 30 million at the moment. It's a property management business. We have a bid on the table, which we hope to close by the end of July for 50 million. And we own about a quarter of that. A quarter of that fund. We then have another, we have a medical packaging business and a specialty cosmetics packaging business. Again, those businesses are still doing really well. They're valued, if we were to get 8x EBITDA, that would be another about 5 million uplift for North Atlantic, and we're considering putting those up for sale soon. Recent investments would be Mr. Fothergill's Seeds, which you might have heard of because actually it's a well-known brand. We're negotiating to buy another specialty components business. We also...
So you've got... So big picture-wise, I mean, essentially what you're saying is that the, you know, the valuations you've got in your book for net assets for all the private quoted businesses are well asset backed. If not anything, they're reasonably prudent given you've got some sales coming through anyway. So it does make it...
Well, they're all boring businesses. There's no technology in there at all.
But boring's the new word nowadays. As long as it stays stable or goes up, then hey, that, well, I'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a pet food business in there that's doing well too. So yeah, I mean, it's so you know, because I've been doing a few presentations recently, that everybody's focusing on unquoteds, but we're feeling really comfortable about our portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, again, I point investors. I mean, you know, my view is that we haven't reached it, but we're getting there. It's peak silly valuation season, and when you see North Atlantic and companies like that, you know, investment trusts that have delivered double-digit returns over 40, 50 years since inception, which says a lot, to say the least, through peaks and whatever it is and recessions. And to trade at such a deep valuation with asset backing, with lots of cash, people should just like thinking, okay, if I don't want to do all the hard work of stock picking, then an investment trust into Harwood or into North Atlantic is not a stupid play. Now just moving on to some individual sort of like public companies that obviously investors can put some money into themselves. One you've been picking up and adding to, you already had a large position because obviously the strategic, what's it called, Rockwell Strategic has now moved over into the portfolio, but Northbridge, or now Crestchick, a load bank business. I know one of your funds have been nibbling on that one, and I think you're actually on about somewhere in the 20% now.
Yeah, I think we're probably close to 24, 25, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Arnold, did you want to take us through that one? Because it looks mispriced, even though the shares have done pretty well.
Okay, well, the way we kind of see that is, at the current price, the market cap's about 56, 57 million, right?
Yep.
I think the latest broker's forecast is EBITDA of 8.2 million.
That's correct.
And you can always assume that there's about at least 800,000 of public company expense. So you're looking at a business making 9 million of EBITDA. We were originally cautious about it because they've historically done very badly in oil services, but they're basically out of that business now, thank God. So you've now got a pure play on Krestchik. And Krestchik is a kind of a pure play on ever-increasing demand for electricity. From, you know, electronic charging points are going to need, ultimately, that the ultimate source is going to need a load bank somewhere, from data centers, very broad industrial uses. So we think that they've just increased their capacity in the UK by 60% because they couldn't produce enough. They've just opened a new facility in America. So I think if you look at it, 9.97 to 63. So you're looking at something at 6.5 times EBITDA. One of the things with a company is that they depreciate the equipment over 10 years, but it lasts 20. So the earnings are understated, particularly so when the company is adding new equipment to its fleet. And the other thing that perhaps you don't know is we had our property team go and look at their facilities. They have a very big site in the middle of England, and it's actually very valuable. We think that site's worth about £8 million, which is quite a lot more than it's on the books for. So what's not to like, really?
I'm with you. I mean, I think given they've just increased the capacity by 60%, they've had record order books for 4 years, it's going to head to an EBITDA of, they'll have further upgrades over the next 2 years. And I could see 2023 being an EBITDA of 10 mil. And I would put a 10 times EBITDA. And I know you might say that's a bit rich, but given the depreciation policy is so conservative, and it's just, you're not looking on an apples and an apples basis with the other rental companies. And you could do a 10 times multiple on a 10 times EBITDA, 100 mil. Yeah. 30 million shares, you get over £3.
We don't like, well, I think the first point to remember is just, it's not all rental. There is, in fact, a manufacturing business in there. So,
yeah.
But actually, you know, typically we don't like rental companies because they don't generate much cash, but this one does.
Well, that's an interesting one for people to have a look at. Another one you've sort of had a good nibble at last week, and again, it's just ridiculous. It's back to sort of like IPO levels, is Verici, which is an immunodiagnostics business for kidney transplants. Admittedly, it's sort of like just starting to commercialize its lead sort of like post-operation diagnostic Tutiva, and that'll take it next year or so. But even so, it came through with very good sort of testing results that the market just seemed to totally misunderstand. Go on.
Well, what I think the market missed was they said, oh God, it's only whatever it is, just under 70%.
Mm.
They aren't allowed to say in a public release that CareDx, which is our competitor, we're 3 times better than. So people thought this was a bad announcement when in fact it was just a stunningly good announcement.
Yeah. So you're saying the biggest competitor is three times less?
We are 3 times better than the competitor.
Wow. Okay, well that does change it. And the key, as I understand it, the key metric is the positive predictive value, not the negative predictive value, simply because
positive predictive value is 3 times better than the competition.
Mm.
It's just crazy silly. And people thought it was bad news. It was stunningly good news. And my understanding is they have 3 hospital systems lined up to take the product as soon as it becomes commercial, which will be this year.
Great. Okay, well...
And the beauty of something like this is there aren't that many hospital systems that do kidney transplants, so reaching them is not as expensive as launching a normal diagnostic.
Right. Okay, gotcha. So actually the commercialization strategy could, as long as you've got good contacts into these few centres, then could be faster and cheaper than it normally is for larger.
Well, one of the hospitals that we believe is doing it, the man is, you know, the leading clinician there is extremely well known in the United States, very highly respected. I mean, as highly respected as Barbara was, well, probably not quite as highly, but But certainly way up there. So that's okay. Why we bought some more.
Good. Well, we'll come on to some more life science stocks because there's a lot of fallen angels. But before we do that, I noticed again a recent purchase, just an adding on, was Hostmore, that I think is spun out of a private equity investment trust, and it does the Friday's restaurant dining chain and 63rd and First Street, which is a new one. But obviously, it's tough in the consumer area. But again, the shares have just been absolutely annihilated. I mean, they're back down to 32p as today, which puts them on a price earnings ratio, if I look at it, even on reduced expectations, of 2.6.
Yeah, that's EV/EBITDA, and it is absurd. I think the whole thing. I mean, we didn't invest in the IPO. It IPO'd at 150p a share, which valued the company at the time at about 210 million. We know there was private equity interest at a few tens of millions less than that. But I suppose people got greedy or whatever, and hope for the future, you know, hope for the best.
Yeah.
We've spoken to the former chief executive officer of the business, had a long chat with her, who basically convinced me this is a thoroughly good business. We've spoken to the management of the company, who we actually knew from another event where we might have actually offered them a job on something.
Okay, this is Robert Cook, is it? And he's the CEO, isn't he, I think? And Alan
yeah,
Clark.
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's just completely the wrong price. The fundamental problem with it is it's also owned by completely the wrong people, because basically it was the sort of fan club that broke up Elektra. And they were either investment funds or they were, you know, funds invested in, you know, large-ish cap. And suddenly they were all dumped with two small stocks. And there isn't a natural ownership base. That's the fundamental problem of the whole thing.
Right. Okay. It'll take time to work that one through, I guess. Meaning opportunities for sort of like canny investors to be able to buy at distress levels, at ridiculous levels.
It is a fundamentally good business. Yes, it's going to be hit by food inflation, but this is a business that's wet-led more than food-led. And obviously drink inflation is nothing like what food inflation is. The demographic is relatively young, so hopefully they've still got some money.
I almost take that as a compliment, because I went there when I was, I think it was about 14, 15, to one of their first restaurants on the Hagley Road in Birmingham, and I had a great time watching people throw cocktails around.
But that's what it is. So
yeah,
we just think it's the wrong price. The trouble is we got that wrong. We started too early, but it is what it is.
So just moving down.
I mean, one day we will be out of a recession. Restaurant groups will be back in favor again. And hopefully, you know, they're talking about getting their EBITDA margins into the mid-teens, which means you could easily get to, you know, 30, 35 million.
Yeah, I know they're looking in the medium term, I think, to double their restaurant footprint, and it has a lot of sort of like kudos with oldies like me who have been before and have nice memories. So it's certainly a place that that I would, if I could eat there, would be good. So would be nice. Just now moving to some fallen angels, which you obviously know quite a lot. So you know, I don't want to put you in a sort of like a position with sensitivity, et cetera, but a sort of EKF healthcare, you know, sorry, EKF diagnostics, you've got Renalytics, Source Bio, and Circassia. All of them have sort of like fallen really hard of late, and they're all quality business with high recurring revenue streams and good growth prospects. Do you want to start off with EKF for starters? Because that's come a long way.
I know. Well, I mean, we started buying again. 35. The current market price, the enterprise value is about 145 million.
Yep.
The cash they just announced is 21 million.
That's correct.
Because they were successful in getting a major customer to take back some inventory that customer had ordered. Market forecast for this year is 16 million. Effectively, we'll assume COVID is over and finished. And the company spent nearly 10 million now developing its enzymes business. So if you just forget COVID, we never really got the benefit of being a COVID company. And we're certainly now getting the downside of being one. You know, this is business, if you look at it, has really good world-leading positions in diabetes, testing for hemoglobin, testing for ketone acidosis, a very good enzymes business, providing product to major drug companies such as Roche. And that's where a lot of the money that we made out of COVID, we've gone and spent that money now on building our enzymes business, where there's a real niche in the market between the major players who, you know, service the food companies and the universities who do very small batches. So small batches of $3-5 million sounds a lot, but truthfully, you know, those are small batches. It's a bit of a niche. It's a niche we think we can exploit very successfully. And make a great deal of money on it. So, you know, I'd be disappointed if the company wasn't earning nothing to do with COVID, well over 20 million within a couple of years. And then, you know, people just simply start hopefully realizing that these things are worth somewhere between 12 and a half and 15 times EBITDA when they're taken over.
Yeah. And on that 20 million, effectively, if you're talking about a 125 sort of market cap, that's it's just over six times EBITDA compared to a potential buyout of 12, isn't it? Double.
Yeah, it's crazy. But it is what it is. And the trouble is, buying stock in doesn't help us very much because we have to sell because we've got 29.9%. So,
yeah.
Anyway, if we do Centaur again,
What about Renalytics? Because that's come off hard as well on the sort of fallen angel.
Renalytics is basically what has happened in the United States is that all these small biotechnology companies have just totally collapsed.
Mm.
Renalytics now has sufficient cash to support its rollout over the next 2 years. And the key to Renalytics is seeing if we can do some more deals with major pharma companies, and more importantly, rolling out the VETS program, which is a large program. And then obviously it's taken longer to get FDA approval than we thought.
This is the military veterans in the States, yeah.
Correct, yes.
How much better is their lead sort of like kidney, their lead product better than the sort of competition, given it's in the similar sort of space, isn't it? A bit further up
there
the food chain.
There isn't any competition. There isn't any competition.
Oh, see, okay. there's no standard of care. So it's really, it gets FDA sort of like orphan drug status and it's the only game in town.
Yes, that's correct.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, it does look, it's come off really hard and looks ridiculous. Another two, Source Bio and Circassia. Do you want to give us an update on both of those? Because Source Bio is about 125p. And
Source has actually been quite stable in recent months. They did a very good acquisition, which significantly strengthened their position in pathology.
Mm.
Again, you know, we're washing out, or they're washing out, all the COVID testing. So the company basically at the moment is downsizing because clearly we don't need 170 people doing COVID testing anymore. And it's going to focus on pathology, genomics, and stability storage.
Yeah,
but stability storage is a relatively slow growth business, but it's very profitable. What stability storage does is if you're manufacturing a drug, you need to know what temperature it should be kept at and how long it's good for at that temperature. Pathology is the exciting business at the moment because, sadly, because of COVID, the backlog for pathology is off the planet.
Mm. This is elective procedures, isn't it? It's 6 million plus sort of stuff. It's related anyway.
Yes, and particularly to cancers, where the company's got good market share. Basically, the core business, which we, when we went public, we always argued was valuable, is still valuable.
Mm. Even more so now after the acquisition.
Even more so now after the acquisition. And we've still got about 15 million in cash.
Mm.
The thing with these companies is the ones that are actually profitable also all have cash. Mm. There's no debt around these businesses. So if you are going into tougher times, but logically, these businesses should not be adversely impacted by a slowdown in consumer expenditure.
Now, if anything, you're going to see a growth because of the elective procedures or the desperate need to be able to treat patients rather than actually in hospital, out in the community, the point of care side.
Yeah. And if we go to Circassia, it's kind of the same story. They've had profit upgrades. They've got, again, no debt. I think they said they had 13 million in cash.
Yeah.
And nothing's really changed. We still believe the company's on for over 40 million in sales. And we just, refer everybody to the chief executive's target, which he and we are very comfortable that is going to be achieved. And in fact, around 30p, we are in fact probably going to be buyers of the stock in the near future.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it's just, crazy. But the guy's actually in, Johnson, the exec chairman, they've over-delivered. They've increased expectations and the shares have gone down. I mean, it's just is totally illogical, but hey-ho. I don't know if you want, now just moving on to some sort of productivity boosting sort of enterprise software with high recurring revenue streams. If you want to take us through sort of Maintel and Tribal, because both of those have also come down. I know Maintel's got a bit more debt, but equally it's got lots of recurring revenue streams and sort of public sector and government contracts doing managed IT services, I think.
Yeah, the thing to remember about Maintel is, because we did buy some more, in fact, it's up a bit since we bought some more, is that, the big shareholders in this company were actually private individuals, turned down £4.50 a share last year in cash from Daisy. We're still absolutely the belief, the market cap's give or take £50 million, the debt is... Call it 20.
Yeah.
And, the 2024 number is north of 15 million of EBITDA, south of 15 million of debt, even having returned to the dividend list. We kind of see that as an 8x event, and that, is more than a double in the share price.
Yeah.
And if you go to 10x EBITDA, you really could get quite excited. Tribal is a slightly different story. Tribal is all to do with basically software for universities.
Yeah.
And the key to Tribal is they're in the process of finishing two major new products, most exciting one being admissions. So the core business is changing to the extent that one-time revenues are declining. That's being replaced by growth in SaaS-based revenues. So the quality of the earnings is going up. And frankly, we see this company as a sitting duck to be acquired over a 2 to 3 year period.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I would say, when it comes to sort of digitization of universities, that's one of the areas or public sector that's so far behind, and so much work to do to drive out inefficiencies, to improve productivity and all this sort of stuff. And you've now got this hybrid of online and classroom learning. I mean, it's just got to be in a good place with sort of like, you know, to upsell products and services as that whole industry transitions to digital technologies.
Yeah. And well, they also want to move it up to the cloud too. You shouldn't underestimate that, which helps them, which okay. actually kind of the same story as Maintel in that respect.
Yeah, it is.
So this is, as I said, the issue here is the biggest shareholder, nobody really knows what their agenda is.
Right.
But I think it's fair to say that, you know, once they've done the cleanup job, as we'd describe it, because this thing had to be cleaned up quite a lot, if you recall, it used to have lawsuits and and they've still got to sort out the business that basically does exam marking, because COVID cost them a lot of their business in the Middle East.
Yeah,
it doesn't fit at all with the rest of it, but you need to clean it up before you sell it.
Yeah.
So I think that's still sort of work in progress.
Well, that sounds like needs just a bit of Harwood magic on that one, given you're very good at this sort of stuff.
Roger McDowell magic on that one.
Oh, is that? Oh, okay. Now, moving on to some even more cheaper chips, sort of like value plays. You've got TP ICAP, which is the sort of like, you know, the interdealer broker. And then you've got Appreciate, which is a sort of like I think it's a Christmas hamper savings company, but also
It's a bit more than that. Basically, they've got Appreciate is that it's not so much hampers, it's Christmas savings per se.
Right.
Which could ultimately be, you know, Marks and Spencer's vouchers.
Yeah.
It's also got a loyalty program for big companies who are thinking, we've got to do something for everybody at Christmas, so let's put them on our loyalty program rather than perhaps give them a Christmas party. And basically this company is about two-thirds of the way through a very expensive upgrade in software, which I'm not entirely convinced was a great investment to make, but it's kind of too late now. So you're looking at a market cap, it would take 50 million quid today.
Yeah.
There's about 18 million in cash.
Yep.
And a business that's trading at an EV/EBITDA multiple for the year that's ended at about 3.
Yes.
Falling into sort of the 2s.
Yeah.
However, what's really, really interesting in this company, which the analysts don't seem to have cottoned on to, is they have a trust fund which has got about 200 million on average client money in it, but which they get the interest income on.
Oh, right.
So it's a massive beneficiary of rising interest rates.
Right. Okay, well, it'll be interesting, because I think they've got their prelims, is it this week? I think maybe tomorrow or something like that. So
We met the chairman recently, who we know quite well because he was involved in Easy Hotels. And he's a really good guy. He basically believes the stock is very significantly undervalued. There's an activist, a European activist on the shareholder register as well. So if he doesn't get it right, I suspect they'll start to activate, and they've got over 10% of the company. And, you know, people are talking about, you know, the dividend yield being this year, you know, 7.5%. So you're paid to wait. It's quite difficult to buy the stock. That's the problem.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, I'm not surprised. There wouldn't be too many sellers at this level, I wouldn't have thought. It'd be crazy. Now, on TPI cap, because, I mean, this has been it's still looking at, if you look at sort of this year's forecast, it seems to be trading on sort of like well, less than four times EBITDA and sort of five or six times PE, and it still should do well in a highly volatile capital market.
Okay, well, backdrop. That might be one reason for owning it, but it's not really why we do.
Okay.
The market cap is about 930 million.
Yep.
Net cash is 100 million.
Mm.
And they own a platform company, a data platform company, which is expected to do about 90 million of EBITDA this year.
Right.
We had the management into Mises. They said it was worth 1.5 billion, which doesn't frankly seem to be impossible. But let's go with 1.25 billion.
Mm.
That alone is worth more than the market cap.
Yeah.
They then bought a company called LiquidNet, which is, I think most people would argue they overpaid for it. They paid 550 million for it. It's actually not doing badly. But let's be conservative and say it's only worth 400 million now. And then you've got my 100 million in cash and a business that's making, as you said, you know, way over 100 million pounds. Must be worth something more than 100 million pounds.
Yeah.
The other aspect of it is that their debt is all at fixed interest rates.
Mm.
But their cash isn't. So hopefully they'll be getting some extra income out of that. And then finally, 60% of their revenues are in US dollars and only 40% are expenses are in US dollars.
Right.
But they should be a major beneficiary of, the improvement in the dollar.
Yeah. Is there any counterparty risk on this? Is it safe for a large cap to be priced so cheap? It just looks weird to me. But
well, most of the people they deal with are very, very large institutions and banks.
Mm.
I can't say there can't be no counterparty risk. But if you go through the back of their accounts, you seem to read a lot more about being caught as in another bank fiddling LIBOR and then right. getting thrown into it from time to time.
Right.
They don't
look after Credit Suisse or a rather Russian banks, do they? Anyway, we'll wait and see.
Well, I don't look after any Russian banks, but no one's saying Credit Suisse can't pay their debts.
That, well, that's right. Well, the credit markets are pricing them such they can't anyway. I saw 9.75% was their latest bonds issue, which was a cocoa, but even so.
God, I hadn't seen that, to be truthful with you.
Just with the... Now, moving on to some opportunities.
And by the way, what they're saying is they're going to pay out 50% of their earnings in dividends, with the other 50% paying down debt. They also have got to spend a few more tens of millions completing. One of the things is they have a lot of brokers who historically were never that loyal, but now basically there's only three big, well, there's only three interbroker dealers anyway now. Mm. So staff turnover is going down, but the technology they're spending should enable them to just, you know, pull out another 20, 30 million out of their cost base over the next couple of years.
Right. So they've got big efficiencies as well.
Kind of everybody hates it. There's a small activist investor who's written to them. And again, when we met the management recently, they realized that they had to do something, I think. And they emphasized at the meeting that Parameta was a totally standalone company. It paid for its own research. And as I said, their number for that business is $1.5 billion.
Well, anyway, it does look, when you look at some of the parts, any part, it looks crazily valued as of some of the other ones. Now, another area or whole sector that has been absolutely annihilated, even though house prices are going up, is the residential property. And obviously, you own a long-term shareholder MJ Gleeson. And last time we spoke 6 months ago, you were picking up your positioning on the market. Do you want to take us through those two? Because I know, I mean, you look at it and you've got house builders on less than sort of tangible book. I know MJ Gleeson is a bit on a premium, but even so, it just looks...
Not much anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's on tangible book now.
Yeah. It's crazy. You're getting the business for free.
So, if we do the on the market first, again, we had the management in literally in the last 2 weeks. We kind of focus on how they intend to get to the 2025 number, which is January 2025. So, it's really 2024.
Yeah.
And basically, at the moment, a right move office is paying something like $1,300 per office.
That's correct to advertise. Yeah,
some will be less. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, these guys are at £200 per office, and a right move is current, and they increase their pricing every year. It's £4 per lead, and on the market is £1.40 per lead. So they believe they can increase their pricing over the next 3 years from £200 to £300. And they believe they can increase pricing for building companies from 100 to 300 as well. So if you put that in context, there's 27.5 million approximately in estate agents and 2.5 million in housing. So that would take your housing to over 40 plus, state agents to 7.5, but let's be conservative and say 5. And then they made a small little add-on acquisition, which would add 2 million to sales, which would give you 47 million in sales. And then assume there's some attrition somewhere. And then their advertising spend at 10.6 million, it had a big increase last year because they didn't have to advertise much during COVID. So they've gone back to more normal advertising. But they're saying that, frankly, they probably don't have to do very much more. So as the revenues go from 30 million to 45 million, you know, we were talking about advertising going from 10 to 12 to 13. More like 12. And then you looked at all their other expenses, which were about 13 last year. And even if you made the assumption they went to 16, which is, you know, pushing it a bit, but or even say 17, you get 15 plus million of EBITDA, which is market forecast for 20, for, as I said, January 25, you know, a dividend yield and 22 million in cash. And you've got a market cap today of, not a lot, so 68 million.
Yeah, 65, yeah.
Now, there are a few more million shares that have to be issued because there was some founder option, the free founder options. So the number of shares actually is probably closer to 85 million, but even so,
yeah,
you're still looking at 73 million. And in a couple of years out, 50 million enterprise value with 15 million pounds of EBITDA for a platform, it's absolutely bonkers.
Yes, it does look crazy.
I mean, Gleeson has got the problem that all the house builders have got. That's not to say they, as in all the other house builders, aren't dealing with it. It's a perception. And that is, you've got rising prices, although I suspect building prices are going to start to ameliorate. Certainly in the United States, the price of timber started to fall very substantially.
Yeah.
I don't think you're going to have many house builders trying to materially increase housing in the short term. So that should take some of the pressure off bricks, et cetera. But you will still have wage inflation. But I suppose the plus of wage inflation is it means you can increase house prices because obviously at some extent the house price is a function of salaries. So particularly for Gleeson, which is, you know, very much at the low end of the market, the affordable end of the market. The problem is you've got the government, you know, virtually declared total war on them all with this cladding issue. Now, it's not a big issue for Gleeson. I think they've said it's a few million. But then, you know, the next issue is pollution in rivers, which slows down planning approvals. And to put it in context, I think our planning approvals have gone from taking 9 months to over 15 months at the moment because of the backlog in local authorities.
That is crazy, isn't it? When they sort of like, you know, the government says it wants to promote 300,000 new houses each year and they're only doing 200 and they increase the effectively the period that it takes to get planning permission through from 9 to 15 months. That's just frankly nuts, but hey.
Well, it's not them who's done that. It's local authorities.
Yeah.
Probably in a concept called working from home.
or not working.
Or not working from home, yes. So, well, I can't say that because if someone...
we'll strip that one out.
Got one of our planning approvals. I don't want to find it's another 3 years.
Yeah, no, that was a joke. That was a joke. Okay. Okay, just moving now on to sort of like some GARP secular growers. Asset Co, which has obviously been in the news a lot with Martin Gilbert, the chairman. And, you know, so I think you're on the board as well. So I know you can't say too much, but it's... But it's a buy and build company, an asset management that is just sort of hoovering up some really first rate assets, River and Mercantile, and just recently Colin McLean's business SVM Asset Management up in Scotland.
Yeah, and I think you know we should note that Colin took half in a convertible loan note at £14, but he took half in our equity at £14. So he saw something which clearly the market didn't see. There was massive insider buying last week, and I think that will continue, including ourselves. We bought 80,000 shares. I think it's just under approximately £7 anyway. So, I mean, the whole thing's just a bit silly now. The company's got 50 million in cash, approximately. Obviously, River Mercantile did a great deal of due diligence into our business when they took our paper. So what got everybody's attention is a thing called Parmethean, which the brokers estimated is worth between 70 and 90 million. So let's just go in the middle of that and call it 80.
What does it do, Christopher?
Basically, it's a platform for IFAs.
Right. Okay. So it helps basically, those guys to service their clients.
Correct. Yes. And it's a good platform. They like it. It was lost in Aberdeen or whatever they call themselves now.
Okay.
It's now very nicely profitable. And you know, just put those two assets together, you get over £10 a share. So you get River and Mercantile, and it's £3 billion for free. You get another platform for free, and you get the Scottish Hub for free. and the Scottish Hub, I don't know what the forecast is, but I think it's over £1 million now. So that's got to be worth £10 million too. So it's all a bit silly.
Yeah.
But the trouble is there's a lot that's a bit silly at the moment, and these things happen. And you know what? We've seen this all before. The trick was going into the mess with cash.
Yeah. Well, as I say, you know, you've been through a few cycles and you know these businesses like the back of your hand. So I would defer to the experts. Investors, have a good look at Asset Co because the board there is absolutely top notch in terms of done this one before.
Martin certainly knows how to build a fund management business.
Yeah, no, I know he does. Yeah, he's done pretty well. He did pretty well out of asset at Aberdeen, that's for sure. Avingtraz. Now, I know when we chatted last time, this one does you know, sort of critical parts and pumps and stuff, and nuclear storage boxes and all that kind of stuff. And I do know actually that it's got sort of 40-50% exposure just to the nuclear industry, which is, you know, sort of now getting another life because of obviously the problems with Ukraine and Russia. But equally, I know you talked very positively about, which is something we're getting for free, which is the Magnetica Healthcare small form MRI scanner. Do you want to just give us a quick sort of like round the houses on Avintraz?
Yeah, by all means. I think the first point again is, you know, this is another company which is, you know, got lots of cash. My understanding is the Luton site is seeing a very big increase in demand at the moment.
Mm.
So moving out of it may not be quite as easy as they originally thought. Let's remember the, you know, in the Hayward Tyler business, a lot of it is parts or replacement parts, not least of all for coal-fired power stations, which somehow are coming back into fashion again.
Yes, particularly in Germany.
Particularly in Germany. And then, of course, the potential orders for those nuclear boxes are off the charts. I mean, I was reading an article of one of the Sunday newspapers, I think 2 weekends ago, basically talking about the fact that they've now really starting to break up a massive part of Sizewell, which has got hundreds of thousands, well, thousands and thousands of tons of this stuff that's got to go into these boxes.
Mm.
And at the moment, they are sole source of that. They're obviously a beneficiary of, you know, HS2 with all their specialty doors.
Yeah, blast-proof doors,
aren't
they? I mean, that
looks a big victory. I mean, I think they bought it for nothing. I think if they were to sell it today, they'd get at least £15 million for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose the real issue with them is, you know, A, what will they do with the cash? Can they find another good deal? Because at the moment, they're maximizing what they've got. They haven't really done a deal now for some time. So, you know, you just need to keep the story going in that respect. It's a bit like Melrose.
Well, you'll be able to help them with that, Christopher, I'm sure.
The medical thing, we're not going to really know till later this year.
Yeah,
but again, our discussions with the management lead us to conclude there's nothing going wrong there either.
Mm.
And as you said, it's totally in the price for free.
Yeah,
I mean, we think Avintraz without that's still worth £5.
Yeah, I couldn't get any less than £5.50. So yeah, no, I'm with you. Now, just moving on to just finally, just some reopening plays because I know you talked about them last time. We've got. Fulham Shaw, which is the old Franca Manca. I think it's David Page, the exec chairman there. You've got 10 Entertainment, which does bowling alleys and is actually doing well on the reopening. And then you've got Central Media with Swag, who's obviously on a sort of like a big increase in margins and a growth objective, which seems to be happening. So you want to, but the shares of all three have come down a lot, which is why, just crazy.
Again, I mean, we're actually got an order in to buy Fulham Shaw at today's price.
13p. I mean, it's got basically a market cap of 82, and it's doing over 100 million of sales, but it's really growing. It's the sort of, the Franca Manca and the real Greek, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, one day he's going to break this thing up and sell it.
Yeah.
For sure. Mm. You know, it's his last one. He's been very consistent. That this is not forever. It will ultimately be owned by somebody else. I know he thinks, because we have discussed it, that he thinks, you know, that the real value of this business starts definitely with the two.
Right.
And hopefully into a mid two. And he'll do it when the time's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the management team are very large shareholders themselves.
Mm.
So why wouldn't they? It's got no debt. So you said they're opening new stores. Pizza is got margins, which mean that you can easily cope with food inflation in pizza.
Mm.
And you've still got a weakened Pizza Express.
Mm.
And just my personal opinion, this is not a plug for one of my companies. I think a Frankenmacker pizza is way better.
Yeah, no, I've heard that.
Pizza Express one.
Yeah, no, I've heard this. People like the sourdough crust, don't they? And the toppings. And yeah, I've spoken to many of people who are permanent sort of Frankenmacker diners. Moving on now to the Tenpin Bowling Boys, the Ten Entertainment. I think they've got about 40, 50 sites, but they seem to be sort of adding on other activities to their centres. And obviously it's a challenging backdrop, but again, the shares have sort of like, you know, come off and 10 times.
Well, the funny thing is that, look, it can't last because it's just impossible. But yeah, so far this year, like-for-like sales, you know, are very substantially above 2019. Mm. And I don't mean a little bit, I mean a lot.
Mm.
I can't remember what the last number the company said, but I mean, we're talking high 30s or early 40s.
Yeah.
And these businesses, when you get that sort of capacity utilization, a lot of it hits the bottom line.
Mm.
So, you know, Ten has gone from being a total basket case courtesy of COVID to being back in a position where if you exclude, it now has net cash. I was sure it'll return to the dividend list sooner rather than later or at some stage. And, you know, it's a very, very well-managed business. And, you know, we are different to Hollywood Bowl. Hollywood Bowl is sort of going down the route of crazy golf, et cetera, where we are sort of very focused on maximizing the value of our box, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And you might be amused, most profitable thing on a return on capital employed in the box is actually ping pong.
Oh, is it? Table tennis, wow.
Table tennis, that's it.
Well, there you go. And it gives you that, you can change these, swap them out as they go in and out of fashion. You can swap them out quite easily. But yeah, I'm with you, sort of like sort of maximizing the return on floor footprint makes total sense, you know, in terms of, you know, what you do. But and use the Tenpin to bring people in, but upsell as they go through and keep it fresh. Why not?
The thing now is people are relatively short of money.
Mm.
They want to have a bit more of an experience.
Mm.
So, you know, if you're going to sort of a restaurant and it's going to be, you know, £15 a head, you know, you can come to a Tenpin, you know, play the game, do a bit of the other stuff around it and have, you know, a meal for 15 quid.
Yeah, totally get it. And also with the summer, with more people actually now having so many problems going abroad for their holidays, they're looking for staycations. You might find actually this summer's not a bad period either because people have decided to holiday in the UK.
I don't want to be a sort of put a dampener on the discussion, but you don't want it to be too hot in the summer.
Yes,
days
true.
Like today are kind of perfect.
Yeah, okay, yeah, you're right. Yeah, gotcha. Just with Centaur, because obviously, you know, Swag Mukherjee, the CEO's put together his 4-year strategy to improve margins. And I think the shares, I mean, they're basically owned sort of like valuable internet real estate, like The Lawyer and I think e-consultancy. And do you want to give us a quick update on that one?
Yes. I mean, I'm due to see Swag quite soon.
Mm.
Obviously, Richard Stabley, who runs Rockwood, is now on the board of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we think it's a massive store of value. If you basically say that there's, it's about 150 million shares outstanding, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 147. Okay, yeah.
So So let's just take that 150. Then if you take, by the time you've December next year, which is sort of the year where he's got his targets, which is 10.6 million EBITDA, and if you add back the corporate overhead, you're looking at probably 12 million to the underlying businesses.
Yeah.
And by then, I would have thought it'd be disappointing if the cash, well, it depends on dividends or cash returns, but if the cash wasn't up to, say, 20 plus million.
Yeah.
So is it really so insane to think the rest of those businesses are worth 10 times?
Yeah, you've got basically enterprise value. You'll have it sort of like if you had 20 million of cash, just north of, well, about 50 mil, you know, with a 10 million EBITDA.
Yeah, I mean, it's remember, so the underlying businesses will be close to 12.
12, yeah, exactly.
So, that takes you to double the current share price in 18 months.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's got valuable. I mean, it's got the first party data, hasn't it? Because it's got its own internet real estate. As people like Apple move to stop tracking, then anybody who's got unique properties online is going to be more valuable for advertisers and for monetizing.
Well, that. I mean, I think the whole point is that this is absolutely not a print business anymore. Print would probably be a very small percentage of revenues now. You've got basically kind of four blocks in there. You've got the lawyer, which is a dominant market leader. You've got Marketing Week, which also is the festival of marketing, which is the smallest business. Then you've got the e-learning businesses and e-consulting businesses, which are very, very valuable. And then you've got a rapidly growing influencer business, where basically what they do is that if somebody wants to, you know, launch a global product, finding the right influencers in the right countries. And I always sort of undervalued that business, but you know, I've increasingly coming to the conclusion that's a better business than I thought it was. But again, you know, you've got no debt, lots of cash, no need to, you know, generating cash, with a team that's focused to build value for shareholders.
And with Harwood having almost 30% of it, so he's going to make sure that the business delivers.
That's the agenda, yes.
Exactly, yeah, with a sort of like a surefire credit on that one. I would say to investors, we're just coming sort of full circle now. And, you know, given what we talked about in the start, i.e. there's a huge discount, particularly on the North Atlantic fund for prices. And we've just run through, obviously, a bit of the private companies and with the public companies. And I would say there's a lot of hidden intrinsic value that isn't even reflected as over and above the net asset value. And the shares are trading at sort of like a lot less, you know, the discount than net. So I would point investors, if you want a sleep at home type of investment, trust investment, then have a good look through that. Now, Christopher, in terms of...
And on top of it, we do actually buy our stock back time to time.
Yeah, well, don't buy too many, because I was going to say, if people want to sort of like buy some of the those funds at all, Christopher, where's the best place? Who's the best person to sort of contact? Because it does look, I mean, you know, it's another silly valuation, the investment trust.
Yeah, I mean, the answer is I'm always very happy to talk to anybody who wants to give me a call. You know, I've always been very open. We actually sadly, we just had our annual general meeting, but you'd be amazed how many people turn up for it.
Yeah.
Hopefully it isn't entirely because they get given, at my expense, by the way, a glass of champagne.
and probably a very good glass of champagne as well.
So, but no, I think, you know, it's worth pointing out that our family, you know, my family owns 32% of that trust. So we're very careful with it, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good. Okay. Well, great. I mean, thanks for. I really appreciate your insights again. I know investors were massively thankful for hearing this, particularly myself and my wife, my dad, who's a real sort of follower and you know, really, really rates Harwood. So thanks again, Christopher, and look forward in touching base in 6 months' time.
Well, thank you once again for your time too. Keep safe and have a happy summer holiday.
Yeah, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.